Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Time to play with pain. Hosted by Emmy-winning comedian and writer Jeff Cesario. Interviewing guests from comedy, entertainment, and sports. Plus, legendary sportscaster Chet Waterhouse. Don't worry, this shouldn't take longer than your average trip to Costco. And now, here's your host, Jeff Cesario.
Well, look at us. Another episode, Play With Pain. My guest is maybe enjoying the empty nest more than anyone I've ever encountered. Greg Fitzsimmons is with us today. Hilarious and a time fool now. He has time to burn. Is this correct, Greg?
It was, and now Uh-oh. Summer's here, and both the little birds have flown back into the nest. And there's no sense that they've progressed as independent human beings while they were gone. Like, I know when they were living in college, both in apartments, that they were capable of doing a dish or cooking a meal.
Right.
And they come home again, and they are little, and then the head goes back, and the mouth goes open like a baby bird waiting to be fed.
Wow. Wow. It's, yeah, there is a time loop in evolution that we're only seeing now. And this is it. There's a regression. And this is the first sign of it, that humans can possibly lose their evolutionary gains.
Yes. I'm starting to stoop a little bit. I'm wondering, am I losing my erectus status?
No, that's, well, yeah, but that's to be expected. Among guys like us, you know, we can't, look, we're standing still. We're bipedal, I believe the phrase is. That's a huge advantage still.
Oh, yeah. But if we were evolving, the hair would be growing and not falling out also.
Oh, that's true. But listen, it beats getting wheeled around by two nurses who are talking about their fantasy football teams as if you don't even exist. All right. Hang on. Chet, do you happen to have an update for us? Does the cartel tunnel have a backup generator? You bet I got an update. Time for the Waterhouse update, sponsored by Craprika. If you just want your deviled eggs to look tasty, try Craprika. America's pastime. Nah, not staring at Elon Musk's alabaster chest. Baseball. Washington outfielder wants Soto trade rumors. Yankees will give him their entire pitching staff plus Dear Evan Hansen tickets. Detroit will make him the CEO of Chrysler. The Dodgers will give him $1 billion and somehow Russell Westbrook. And finally, Cincinnati is so far behind in the standings, George Foster is their home run leader. That wrap-up sponsored by Nutsacks, a perfect serving of nuts in a pocket-sized sack. That's Nutsacks. NFL! For the first time ever, the Chicago Bears will wear orange helmets, said Coach Matt Eberflus. Oh, God, am I really the coach of the Chicago Bears? Packers' Aaron Rodgers said he would attend voluntary workouts this season, except when it conflicts with his Gregorian chanting class. That item sponsored by Lotions 11, the smoothest, most radiant heist gang ever. NASCAR, M&M's 400. Chase Elliott wins after Denny Hamlin. His car fails a post-race inspection. They found Reese's Pieces in it. Oh, you can't do that at the M&M's 400. And finally, this week in sports history, the year 1908, the place, London, England, American Johnny Hayes wins the Olympic marathon when Italy's Durando Pietri is disqualified for getting assistance before the finish line. In Pietri's defense, it was only his footman trying to help him put on a salmon cardigan, which everyone felt went better with his skin tone. This Waterhouse Update is sponsored by Jehovah's Witness Protection. Disappear into the warm grip of the Lord at Jehovah's Witness Protection. Back to you, Jeff and Greg. Wow, thank you, Chet. That was
Jehovah's Witness Protection. I like it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. It was when I was writing, I had to put a writing sample together for SNL. Didn't get the job, but I did have a good joke on my samples. This was a true story. It was a military jet crashed in Texas and killed a group of Jehovah's Witnesses. And my punchline was, after the accident, there were no witnesses.
You have to exercise that muscle, no matter how tragic. But yeah, that can you, because you're hitting the road, you're working. Do you even bother with topical stuff right now, with political stuff, or is it just not worth it? Or is there ways to get into it? How do you
go in and out of it? Like, I just always feel like if I think of something funny, I'm going to do it.
Right. And if it's, yeah, you just prove that.
Right. If it's something that's political, I might do it. Like right now, I've probably got 6 or 7 minutes of abortion jokes just because I think it's funny to do jokes about abortion. But I don't do Trump jokes because I don't find them funny. Like, I don't find him funny.
Right.
I don't find the situation funny. Abortion is funny because it is 75% of Americans believe that women should have a right to choose, and yet it's being made illegal. And that's when you go like, all right, that's a funny idea.
Right. Yeah. That there's a teeny group of royalty that is sort of deciding morally what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems really odd. Yeah.
Yeah. So, people always would ask me, like, what's my stance on abortion? And I'd always say, usually it's leaning against the counter, waiting for them to run my credit card. But it's not.
And yeah. And it only sort of it only came out sort of after the giant explosion of controversy. It comes out, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but over the last 20 years, 50% of abortions are now a pill that you just take.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. They have a pill that's good through like 12 weeks. A full 50% of abortions now take place that. So now happen that way. So now there's there's going to be this weird mad scramble in conservative religious right or whoever's spearheading this. Like, oh man, hang on. We got to go after the male, you know?
Right.
Where's that going to lead?
Well, they've continued to go after the male because with that, DeLove or what's
DeJoy.
DeJoy.
DeLove was in the 70s. Funk group.
DeLove. The Republicans are all about stopping the mail.
Yeah. It just seems as if they would. Here's what frustrates me most about the Republicans. If they would just do a couple of things, they could be in power forever, but they won't do those things.
Yeah.
Like show some compassion. Support public education.
Yeah.
That would be one area.
Yeah.
You know, if they did that, even restructuring it to teach the things that are more in line with their principles, teach finance, teach how to invest, teach how to be personally responsible with your dough. Fine. You know, like get those things in, quit banning books and quit, you know, like if they did two or three things, people will go, hey, they're not half bad. you know. But they can't bring themselves to do it.
Yeah, and going after, you know, teaching kids. We don't want you teaching our kids what gay is, because what? Then your kid is going to touch another boy's penis. If your son's touching another boy's penis, guess what? He's gay.
Yeah. You're in an English class at that point. You're just learning terminology. You're not, it's not about sex.
Right. It's just now it's biology. You're just learning what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. Telling you how to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're learning lexicon at this point. Now, we have some similarity in approach to comedy, which is, for me, probably 90% of whatever's funny about the joke is in the words. The words are carrying a tremendous amount of the weight.
Yeah.
You know, I can throw an eyebrow once in a while or a gesture, but, you know, by and large, it's still when I'm writing, because I've been writing more, I'm trying to get back on stage a little more, and I'm realizing, oh, you know, it's way too late. I'm just going to embrace this. This is exactly who I am. The words have to be funny or I'm screwed.
I get so jealous when I see Theo Vaughn or somebody go up there and just be funny, or Joey Diaz. And
yeah.
And you're just like, oh man, I just, you know, my words have to carry everything because I have no personality. I'm assuming that's what you're saying about us. Like, we don't have charisma. We don't have that thing.
Yeah. If we did, we would have at least had 3 or 4 failed sitcoms built around us.
Exactly.
We don't even have that.
I mean, we have showed up for a long time.
Yeah.
I feel like it's on the waterfront, and you know, and I'm standing there waiting to get a ticket.
Right. There's just some people then who also get sort of what I call the PGA exemption card, who they just, for some reason, there must be one stat that sticks out to the executives, some like TVQ or something, where they go, well, eventually something has to work with Tay Leone. We have to get it down.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. Jonathan Silverman is going to have a big hit. I'm telling you.
I don't care if we have to try it a 12th time. And you just go, really?
Yeah.
One of those you couldn't slide to a Fitzsimmons Cesario buddy flick thing? Is there anything? No.
Yeah.
There is not.
No, but we're relegated to writing the funny things they say and then talk about how funny they are. We're the funny ones, not them.
Now, when you're writing, do you get, I've seen myself do this and I sort of recognized it from a while back as I'm writing newer stuff, but I'm going, okay, I'm putting things in voices or character. And then as I get closer to the gig, I go, well, that's not going to fly. I can't really pull that. I can pull it off a little bit, you know, but yeah, cut that whole bottom paragraph. That's out. Just do the joke and a little turn with a little voice and move on. Do you catch yourself doing that?
Yeah, I find it's like, you know, writing, I do find if I open up a Word document and I just vomit material out, then I feel like, okay, in there's going to be nuggets in there, but I can't just write the nuggets. I have to get all that other crap out there. So that extra paragraph, you needed to write that, you know?
Right.
Because that's how you find the next idea. And then I feel like it's 50% that, and then 50% being on stage and smelling the blood of one of those nuggets getting a laugh and then going, okay. And then improvising and adding to that.
Right.
And then listening to the set later and then writing down the new stuff that I said on stage. It's like 50-50, I think.
Right. So you do write on stage. If you're getting traction somewhere, then if the crowd's right, you'll go and see if there's something else there.
Yeah, because then when you're on stage, when you're sitting in your office, you're a writer and it's boring and it's painful and it sucks. And then when you're on stage and you're getting a laugh, now it's like you're with your buddies and it's the most fun thing in the world. But to get invited to the party, you need to do that initial writing.
Do you ever find yourself, at least on the page, getting kind of preachy? Even though neither of us have ever done that on stage, or it's been ages since I have, and I've learned that, learned the error of that way quickly. But, you know, it's still sometimes I'll look through, like, you know, as you know, you just got a log of material that you start to go through and see if any of it's worth anything. And I'll hit a thing where, you know, it'll just be like, these people should mind their business if they would, you know, and you go, well, that's not even that's not even a joke. What am I how am I going to do that? There's nothing there.
Well, because, like, you know, all you hear today is how comedy is supposed to be transformative and you have to say something. And I've never been a believer in that. And, like, I remember Seinfeld said one time, nobody in the history of comedy has ever changed their mind based on a joke that they heard, which I don't know. I don't know if I fully agree with that, but it's really not my agenda. But once in a while, I land on something that has a point and does say something. And so I think it's important to start there. Like, it is important. Like, for many years, I used to read the New York Times every day, and then I would start writing my stand-up after that. So I might take, a Maureen Dowd column that had something funny in it, and I might kind of, like, have fun with that and see if there's anything there. And so it tended to be more political back then. But I do think it's important to start somewhere that you want to, like the abortion thing. I can sit down and write abortion jokes because it's in my head. It's something I'm feeling. It's something I'm, you know, Christ, I've got a 19-year-old daughter, and I would hate to think that, like, God forbid she got pregnant, that she couldn't get an abortion, then her life would be, you know, ruined by having a kid at this age without a, you know, with a dopey boyfriend. Don't tell him I said that. He's abortion material. I call him abortion.
Exactly. Oh, he might just be material. You might not have to qualify that.
Yeah.
Yeah. 19 is a choice age for doing things that you still have the lizard brain of a 12-year-old. And only some of the mechanism of an adult in place.
Right.
So you still think, like, hey, which end of the curling iron is hot? I forget. I'll just grab one end and see what happens. And you go, okay.
Yeah.
Right. I'll follow him around for a while. That's 10 minutes. So she's dating. How long has she been dating?
It was a pandemic relationship that somehow survived. And so, I mean, look.
You definitely said that as if you had hoped it had not.
I think it's very hard having a daughter to think anybody could be good enough for your daughter.
Yeah.
But in this case, he's not. He's just not. There's very few daughters he would be good enough for.
So you're giving him a wide berth, and he's still clogged the Suez Canal with his oil tank.
Yeah. There's too much dead weight that's bogging down the boat. But look, you know, she's gonna learn. I mean, it's very hard because it's at that age where at 19 you can't micromanage anymore. You have to go to his own defense and sort of, like, let the play develop, and then hopefully we'll look at the tape later. We'll try to learn by watching the tapes.
Sure. You can always call a timeout real fast if you have to.
Yeah.
If it's getting out of hand.
Yeah. We know how the game is going to end. It's just when when we're going to throw in the towel here.
Yeah. Fitzsimmons has to call a timeout. They've run 11 straight on him. Hey, that's sponsored by Auto Body Experience. Hover 20 feet above your car repairs. That Auto Body Experience. Hey, while we're talking sports, New York guy. This is crazy in New York right now. I'm fascinated by this because it hasn't happened in a long time. The Yankees are so far ahead that I actually think the curvature of the earth is coming into play. I don't think you can see them anymore.
And
the Mets are hanging in there, which for a guy like me looks fantastic. And for Mets fans, is just hell. Because they're waiting for the axe to fall, it seems like. But I think they have a good chance of hanging on. Which were you? Were you Mets?
Well, my father was a radio announcer on WNEW AM. And so they covered the Mets games and the Giants and the Rangers. And so we would get free tickets to games. So even though we're a Bronx family, we ended up being Mets fans and going to all the Mets games. So back when they sucked, I remember as a kid, me and my friend used to tease each other and we'd say like, you're a fucking Mets fan, which was like the ultimate loser thing you could say about somebody. They were so bad for so long.
Oh yeah.
And then I had the pure joy of, you know, going off to college in 85 and watching them turn into the, and in Boston. So my father came up. My father was actually really good friends with Rusty Staub, and he used to play golf with like Wally Backman and Keith Hernandez and
all these guys. Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So he came up to Boston for the World Series, game 4. He came up and he had some extra tickets, and I got to bring a friend of mine, and watching them win in 86 was like probably, without a doubt, the sports highlight of my life.
Oh yeah. I mean, not expected to, getting beaten, competitive, but the Stocks had kind of had their number, and then the whole thing just went to hell.
Yeah. They were bad guys, you know. I mean, I don't know, you've seen the documentary, right, about them. They were just doing coke and getting into bar fights the night before day games.
Yeah, getting laid between innings.
Yeah,
is my favorite thing ever.
Wait,
I thought the coolest thing. I think Strawberry and Gooden were getting laid between innings.
Right,
and I remember as a kid, the Braves were still in Milwaukee, and I went to a game, like the only game I ever saw. We were way out in the right field bleachers, but I could see the home team dugout from the right field bleachers. I could see the Braves dugout, and Aaron hit a homer, rounds the bases. And this is back when he was a gazelle. I mean, he was probably 163 if he weighed a pound. I mean, you know, he was nothing. It was all in his wrists, and he cranks out a homer. He just does that trot around the base, just touches home base, goes into the dugout, gets, you know, shakes hands and everything, goes into the dugout tunnel. And I see him in silhouette, and he just pulls out a cigarette and starts puffing away.
Yeah.
I'm like, and I mean, it was one of those moments. It was unachievable for me athletically, but I went, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. I have to try to do that.
That's great. Well, my father, he belonged to a golf club, and I got a job at the golf club as a parking attendant. And so one of the days that my dad was playing with Rusty, they came up from the city. This was in White Plains, so it's about a half hour north of the city. And they came up, Rusty Staub had remember those Dodge vans, the club vans that were kind of wide and it had a little sink in it and had a little bar. So I parked his car, and I remember it was Ralph Kiner came up. Remember Kiner's
corner? Oh, sure. Kiner's corner.
Yeah. So Ralph Kiner comes up with Keith Hernandez and Rusty, and they get out, and it was the morning. It was like at 10 o'clock tea time. And I get in, and there's half-drank beers all over the back of the van. And I was like, this is it. This is the fucking life. This was in season. This was, you know.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. What a tremendous period in your youth. What an incredible thing where you just know that you have a pipeline to Mets tickets and Giants tickets and Rangers tickets.
Yeah.
And not in a like, my dad can get it. Just like it was just like, oh yeah, we have toast for breakfast and we have Mets tickets. It's so great. And then to be parking cars Man, I'm telling you, not that you'd want to do it, but there's got to be a script. Not that anybody would make a great movie like this anymore, but there's a script in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And it was, I think I would have to be a baseball player. I would have to be inspired to play baseball, whereas I saw the van and I was inspired to become an alcoholic.
No, that's much more universal.
Yeah.
that's where you get the masses coming to the movies, because yeah. That's what I used to think, those things driving us. You go, oh, you know, now you see him and you go, that has to be a lonely person. But back then you just went, oh, that's the coolest thing ever. Yeah. I have a living room that rolls and yeah. And people can't see what I'm doing in it. Great. I'm in.
Yeah. And then when I pulled the van out, we parked the cars next to each other. And the van was so big that when I went down to pull it up, I pulled out of the spot and the back rear bumper hung out and it grabbed the front bumper of another lady's car. And I pulled off both their bumpers because I was like rushing. I wanted to be a good parking attendant and get there fast. And sure. So it got pulled off, not entirely, but it was kind of hanging. And so, of course, the club said, we'll go get it fixed and we'll pay for it. And so Rusty gave them the bill, and he it included an oil change.
That's great. That was back when you still kind of needed to do that every now and then, even if you're Rusty Staub. It was sure. Like, hey,
yeah,
here's $40 I can save. What am I? Why am I not doing this?
Yeah, that's pain. Yeah, that's pain. Pain and suffering.
So where are you with the Mets? Where's your emotional center right now?
I stopped watching baseball after the 86 World Series because I knew it was never going to be that good. Well, there was a strike. There was a strike not long after that. First of all,
insight, my friend. That is great insight to go, I know right now it's not getting better. I will never watch this sport again.
Right. It's like having great sex with a girl in a one-night stand and then saying, nice to meet you. Take care. Have a good life. It'll never be that good again. I think there was a baseball strike not long after the 86 World Series. And the Mets also traded away a lot of the good players.
Right,
and
right.
I just kind of went, nah, I'm out.
So now what's your favorite thing on SportsCenter? I got my wife into the top 10 plays of the day.
Of course. Yeah.
So now 10. She loves it. We watch it. But we are both equally adamant that no lacrosse highlights should be in the top 10 highlights.
It's true.
Because you cannot you have to watch the net 100% of the time
yeah.
to know if somebody scored. And I mean the back of the net. You can't watch the action.
Yeah.
You have to watch the back of the net. And then when it does that, you go, oh, okay, somebody scored.
Yeah.
Why are they doing it?
I don't know, but it's like I've watched games and I think, is this a drill? Is this practice where you stand around and just whip the ball at the guy? There's yeah. There's no midfield action at all. Nothing happens in the middle of the field.
Right. Yeah, it's like bees with only two flowers in the lawn. They're just there or they're there.
Yeah, right.
And it looks like a practice on another level. I don't think anyone's wearing a uniform that matches even 40% of anyone else's gear. The helmets are all different yeah. and one guy has shorts on and another yeah. person does. I don't get the whole sport. It's got to be, and you've been enough at it at Bays and produced enough stuff to know, okay, this is just some asshole on the production staff who goes, you know, lacrosse is one of the greatest games ever.
Yeah.
And just keeps throwing fucking lacrosse highlights in and then they have to select them.
Yeah, he's got a bandana on his head. There's fish playing in the background on an 8-track. He's got a golden retriever that's also got a bandana on.
Sure.
He's getting ready to play Ultimate Frisbee after the editing session.
Sure.
No, but, you know, it's originally it was, a native indigenous people sport.
And we hijack that and turn it into something worth it.
They got to go back to the original rules, which is the playing field was like a square mile. And you had like 100 guys on each team. And I think the losers had to kill themselves. I think we got to get the old rules back. That I will watch.
Sure, let's go old school. People like, hey, let's go back. Everybody wants to go back in time because things were better then.
Yeah.
Let's go back. Sure. Why not? Do you listen to sports radio?
I don't. No.
So you don't care. What kind of radio do you listen to? Because I will once in a while. I enjoy Colin Cowherd's show because I think he brings it pretty consistently to an underlying motivation that's more human than sport. Yeah. And that I like, regardless of what he's talking about, he winds up bringing it to something that feels a little more human than it is about sports.
Right.
But yeah, there's a lot of shouting going on.
Yeah.
A lot of shouting. That seems to be one of the number one things in sports radio right now is shouting, which I can understand why you wouldn't watch it. Well, what do you listen to? What do you like?
Well, yesterday was Sunday, so I get up and I put on 88.5, and they have the Bob Dylan Radio Hours, where it's a 3-hour show, and it's all thematic. And this woman, I forget the woman's name, she's amazing. And she does, like yesterday it was Heat Wave, because the heat waves. And so it was all about hot. Bob Dylan's song's about heat. And that's amazing. I love that.
Well, listen, if you want to get those kids out of that house, blast that. Full.
Exactly. Yeah. Lay grass, my big grass.
What's wrong with your dad?
Why is there a stroke victim on the radio?
So you like eclectic. You like to get into the hipster corners of radio.
88.5 is a great local station. I mean, and then on digital radio, I listen to FUV, which is the indie station in New York out of Fordham University. That's a great indie station. And then I listen to Stern a lot. I still listen to a lot of Stern.
Yeah. He's still hitting the ball so hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing to me that he's not recognized on some levels, although I don't think he pushes it, but he's just a great comedian. It's a different set of clubs, maybe in some respects, a little bit different sport. But when you look at what he does, I've always looked at it. So I've never understood comics who have a problem with him, you know, because you just go, oh, he's doing a bit. This is how he gets into it. Right. He acts aggravated. Then he does this. Now he's got other participants in the bit so he can lay back, because that's a genius of his,
right,
which is so beyond anything I could do as a human being. I don't want to talk to people, let alone somehow figure out a way to get an alchemy going where if you're listening to the show, you go, I think that's a full 40 minutes. I haven't even heard Howard say anything. It's been all Sal and Richard and whatever, you know, some weird problem is bubbling up like a volcano. It's incredible.
Yeah. I've always said like a big part of his gift is that he's P.T. Barnum, you know, the whole whack thing. He knows what human beings will be compelled by, what weirdos are going to make people listen, and he brings them in, and then he knows how to treat them with just enough dignity that they would call in and sit on hold for 3 hours to talk 30 seconds but just enough insult to make it funny.
Yeah. And then that's the stuff with his parents right now.
Yeah.
Is heart-wrenching and hilarious.
Yeah.
Which is the requirement, I believe, for hosting the special George Carlin episode, whatever, you know, I mean, or the comedy awards. Or I mean, you look at that and you go, how do you not see that and hear that and go, well, there's nobody in the country, Chappelle included, who can do that right now.
Yeah, right.
Amazing to me. Stunning.
Yeah, it takes a combination of, I guess, maturity and immaturity. You know, like he still doesn't let go of the silliness.
Yeah.
And the 13-year-old boy with a slingshot in his back pocket looking through a peephole in a girl's shower. Like the excitement of that mixed with the guy who is a Jewish mensch from Long Island who genuinely cares about people and cares about family. And he's always had that dichotomy going. You know, I think one of the challenges of his career has been when he got divorced, because so much of being married to his first wife gave him a free pass to have, like, you know, the bikini contest and
riding
the Sibian and all that stuff. Because he went, yeah, but he's a good guy. He's got a wife at home. And then he had that period before he met Beth where he was just a single guy. And it felt a little creepy for a minute.
Yeah. And I think it even felt creepy to Howard. I mean, you know, on one level, it was like, I think there was a part of him that went, all right, I did it. Like, what did we go out? Two nights in the last couple of months? All right, I'm good.
Yeah.
I got enough of that.
And it's so funny because, like, his shtick was so much that he was married and he wishes he could be, oh God, I would love to have sex with you. And then when he finally got the chance, he was like, nah, I need another wife. I need to be monogamous.
Yeah, that was pretty fast.
Yeah,
that turnaround was pretty fast. That was one of those where he just, the second he got into the gray area, it was like, well, I'm back to black. This is better.
Yeah,
this is better.
Right.
Which you got to respect. All right, my friend, we're out of time. This was incredible. We talked one sporting thing. That's all I need. Hey, guys, that portion of the broadcast sponsored by Cramden Yards, where every home run goes right to the moon, Alice, and Handelabra, the world's fanciest doorknob. So when can we hear your podcast? First of all, folks, follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Fitz Show. And how do we find the podcast? What's cooking? Because I know you have a couple.
Is Fitz Dog Radio, comes out on Tuesdays. And then on Sundays, I do a thing called Sunday Papers with Mike Gibbons, who you know.
The great Mike, the mystical Mike Gibbons.
And we do stuff from the news. And then on Wednesdays, I do Childish with Allison Rosen, where we talk about child stuff. Also get some stand-up dates. I'll be in Algonquin, Maine on August 11th at Jonathan's. And then Manchester, New Hampshire on August 12th and 13th. Go to FitzDog.com for tickets.
FitzDog.com for all your Greg Fitzsimmons needs. Thanks so much for coming on. Now get back and finish making breakfast for those kids, because I know they're not doing it for themselves.
Oh, they haven't gotten up yet. No, they're not up yet.
Thanks for coming on, man.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Follow me on Twitter at Real Jeff Cesario. My album, What Was I Thinking? Streaming everywhere. Play With Pain mugs available at jeffcesario.com. That's Chet on one side, Play With Pain on the other side. And check me out. I'll be doing some stand-up Comedy Magic Club, hopefully this Saturday. And go to jeffcesario.com. Knock on wood, I'll have some fall dates soon. Chet, what do you got cooking this weekend? This weekend, I'll be in Wrong Bay, Saskatchewan, for the Water Skiing Speed Championships. Last year's winner, the late Fireball Dwyer, will not defend. Sponsored by, Slacker Barrel. Come on in and eat or not. We don't really care. This is Chet Waterhouse reminding you to play with pain.